Sunstone Theological Society presents Casual Dating at BYU, recorded live at the 1988 Sunstone Theological Symposium, held August 17th through the 20th, 1988. We take you to the University Park Hotel in Salt Lake City, Utah, where the program is just now beginning.
Welcome out. My name is John Jesperson, and I'm acting as the moderator. I am an owner of a small business in Utah County, and wish I didn't know Dan Rector, because that's why I'm here. It was interesting. I'll give you some background. And when he called, I was out one evening with my wife, and I had a couple of teenage cousins that were babysitting in our house. And when we got back late in that evening, I had a note pinned to the door saying that Dan Rector called and said that he wanted you to speak or wanted to moderate a discussion on casual sex at BYU. And so I said, I'll do it. And my wife was going to come. She thought, oh, that ought to be really interesting. So I called him up the next day, and he told me it was casual dating, and we were a little let down, but we came anyway. Our topic is casual dating at BYU, and Leonard Wald is going to read a paper he's wrote on that subject. And from that point, we are going to then have a discussion between the panel and he and also the audience. But first of all, let me just mention the names of the panelists. We are going to have, we do have Heidi Steele, a political science major from Elk, Washington. Great. Jim Jeffries is a BYU graduate, and he's from Alpine, Utah. Christian Rushforth has not showed up yet, but she is an English major from Orem, Utah. And Mark Freeman also has not shown. You're from Bloom, Colorado. Leonard, would you, before you start reading, would you just mention your background and a little bit of that information for us?
Sure.
Turn it over to Leonard.
Okay.
It's not normally my style to read something, but that seems to be the way things are done around here, so I'll do it that way. I was born in Salt Lake City. I'm married to Donna Christensen, a remarkably intelligent and an independent woman in Salt Lake City, in the Salt Lake Temple. My education is a BS in chemical engineering and MS and PhD in nuclear engineering. And I'm employed by Lockheed Laboratories in Palo Alto, California, and my work is in sensor system design, so you can see I'm thoroughly unconnected with my subject. However, I have one connection, and that is that I'm a father. That's correct. Okay. The name of the paper is actually The Death and Resurrection of Casual Dating at BYU. And I'll just read the paper as I've indicated. The men at the Y don't ask me out, Dad. What's wrong with me? My daughter asked. I don't seem to have trouble when I'm here in California. I looked at her carefully. Tall, ash blonde, pale, translucent skin and ruddy cheeks. A slender figure, interesting conversationalist. Intelligent and competitive. I remembered her older sister's similar problems. A few dates until her senior year at the Y, yet dating success in California and elsewhere. And characteristics. She's tall, red blonde, apricot complexion, slender, easy, friendly personality, and again, intelligent and competitive. It's all wrong, I thought. These are just the women I'd have dated when I was young. They'd be interesting dates. They'd make excellent partners in marriage. Still, I'm their father and probably prejudiced in their favor. Maybe it's their own fault. I didn't have an answer for her then, but my experience told me that it was possible to find out, so I decided to try. I knew it'd be a tough job. I live in San Francisco area, and the Y is in Provo, Utah. But undaunted, fools rush in, my wife quipped. I started. First, I asked my daughters for some details about dating at the Y. It's occurred to me that I had better, at this point, put on my glasses or I won't be able to get through the rest of it. I cross-checked their description with that of my nieces and nephews and daughters of friends to reduce prejudice. I interviewed women who dated a lot, one or more times a week, and those who didn't, less than once every 2 weeks. The situation they described seems strange to me. Casual dating, which is specifically a means of getting acquainted, was described as rare at the BYU. I considered that bad news because casual daters are not trying to impress each other and tend to be themselves, just people. It's cheap, a good way to become acquainted, and either man or woman can ask. For example, hiking, biking, shopping, picnics, studying, tennis, auto rides, meals at each other's apartments are common as casual dates, or at least were in my time. On the other hand, serious dating, activities that quickly end in marriage, is more widespread but very truncated. Relationships pass quickly from initial meeting to talk of marriage, so there aren't many actual dates, and men dominate the situation. Serious dating seems to be what many women at the Y want. They speak often of where a relationship is going, even though they get fewer dates that way. Activities for serious dating tend to be different from casual dates. For casual dates. Sports, dances, concerts, movies, church activities, and there is this missionary reunion, which apparently always brings a giggle from people at the Y. Another feature of the dating system at the Y that was mentioned was similarity of the women who date a lot. Men talk about looking for a 10, a physically beautiful woman. For example, a 10 is shorter, slender, but not without bust, has a perfect complexion, is not overly sensual, you've got to have the proper image, is carefully made up, not too much, got to have a natural look, and is feminine. Frilly clothes and long curly hair was mentioned. This image is interesting and indicative, but most of the women I talked with claimed that physical characteristics were not the primary similarity. My nephews talked more about sparkle. This apparently was the ability to keep the conversation going with such finesse that a man feels comfortable without expending any effort. But even this description only partially describes the primary characteristics of the popular woman. The two women I talked with that dated the most concluded that the most important attribute for a woman is the ability to project warmth, cheerfulness, and personal interest. It's the look that says, "I care about you." One woman carried it further, and she called it awe. For her, the look said, "Your ideas are more exciting than mine. Your career is more important than mine. I dream of you taking me away from my mundane life and taking care of me forever." And the awe must be, or appear to be, sincere. All the women that I talked with gave me the impression that the real understanding between men and women is rare. Men often assumed women were not understandable or didn't think about understanding at all. All the women, let's see. Or didn't think about understanding at all. Most of the serious dates and the atmosphere surrounding man-woman relationships at the Y seems to discourage understanding between the sexes. This information was useful but questionable, so I felt that I needed an adult viewpoint. I decided it would be especially helpful if I could locate a sociologist that had done a study on dating practice at the Y, so I persuaded my daughter to do a religious search. Oddly, no serious studies were uncovered. She did uncover some unpublished results of a questionnaire on dating given to class members by Professor Phil Kuntz, who's an old friend of ours. Specifically, 15 to 20% of the students did most of the dating. Only 2% had dated others in the class. 75 to 80% wanted to date more, and 60% said women asking was okay, but women don't ask. And dating practice does not change. For contrast, I looked into dating practice in other universities. I have some contacts with San Jose State, Stanford, Michigan, and Arizona State. By talking with my daughters, their friends, and colleagues that went to these other universities, they reported a complex but gradually improving situation. Most date, they said, although there is a significant core of students who don't. Women seemed less desperate in their search for husbands. They had their education and careers to be concerned about. Casual dating is more common. Most dates are informal and inexpensive. They report that those who date are diverse in dress, physical appearance, and point of view. In fact, one reason for dating seemed to be to explore diversity. Most important, there's less of the need to be odd. The women use the technique, but more in the sense of a useful way to improve social relations. Men don't seem to take it seriously. A feeling of equality is more common. Those I talked with believe understanding between sexes, between men and women, is becoming more common. Casual dates seemed to encourage discussion and an atmosphere of people relationships rather than man-woman relationships in a church context. For example, they talk of feminism, birth control, sex, psychology, sociology, science, current events, without the constraint of being orthodox in their views of men and women in relation to church doctrine. They even feel enough at ease to say things they don't believe to explore their ideas. I don't wish to describe these other universities being ideal. They aren't. I heard about considerable premarital sex, and women's positions are still quite heavily circumscribed. I found articles in college newspapers describing men who boasted that their only dating goal was conquest. The most significant thing I found was diversity. There was room for a broad range of social relationships at the non-Mormon universities, while the range of acceptable relationships at the Y was more limited. After considerable effort, however, I found I still didn't have a precise picture of dating at the Y, or at non-Mormon universities either, for that matter, but I decided I did have enough information to conclude that my daughters were not alone in their situation and that there are a few options I could suggest to them. So again, like a fool, I rushed in. I cornered my daughters for a talk. Each conversation went something like this. You asked why men at the Y don't date you. Let's list what they seem to want and compare with your feelings about yourself. She squirmed uncomfortably and said, well, okay. They want women that are shorter. It's embarrassing for a man to have a date that's taller than he is while he's trying to dominate as he feels he must. Well, Dad, I'm nearly 6 feet, and there's not much I can do about that. What else? They want women to be feminine-looking. Am I feminine-looking? I looked at her carefully, eyes filled with life and intelligence, a sense of presence and confidence, a tendency toward individuality, which showed in prickly remarks, short hair, stylish rather than feminine clothing styles. You look capable and elegant, but you don't qualify as feminine at the Y. You need longer curly hair and less individual clothing styles. She shrugged and said, what else? They want a correct viewpoint toward the church. I suppose I'd call it orthodoxy. You've got to be kidding. I love the gospel, but orthodoxy never seemed to be the way to discover truth and build spiritual strength. You could act orthodox and then show your lack of orthodoxy a little at a time. I don't know if I could do that either, she replied. It seems dishonest, but go on. They want sparkle. Of course. Look, everything I've heard about sparkle is vague. Did you get a clear definition of it? No, but I think it has something to do with keeping the conversation rolling when your partner has run out of things to say. Dad, I get mad, and I cut them sometimes when they're stupid, and I bait them when they're smart. I expect them to fight back with good humor. Fast repartee is exciting. Cutting and baiting can lead to problems. it's sometimes hard to tell where good-natured fast repartee ends and personal attacks begin. It seems to be okay at other universities. Well, there's a broader range of acceptability there. Well, I'll consider it. What else? They want a good listener and supporter. That's fine, Dad, but can I talk about my goals, my ideals and dreams too? What about my favorite subjects? Her reply reminded me of the woman who told me of at last finding a man with interest in intellectual subjects. After a stimulating conversation, he avoided her in favor of a small feminine woman who held him in awe. You can talk about a little about such things, but you must be careful. Don't bury him with your ideas all at once. Let him see the real you a little at a time. View him with a little awe. Remember that his career, his ideas, and dreams must be viewed as more important. But they aren't. My ideas and dreams are as important as his, and my career is important too. There may be hard economic times after I marry. I may have to help make ends meet. My husband may die. I may never get married. Besides, he'll get tired of hearing about home and babies eventually. I'll certainly tire of talking about them. I know that, and you know that. But that's apparently not the way the men at the Y view things. You have to expose them to your new ideas carefully, a little at a time. That's disgusting. All wears thin very fast on both sides. She paused and then said, "You knew I'd say that about that idea before you even said it, didn't you?" And I said, "Yes." Go on. The most important characteristic of a woman who dates a lot seems to be the ability to project warmth, cheerfulness, and personal interest. She paused and said, "How do I project it? Do I bake cookies and fawn over them like some of my roommates do?" Absolutely not. One woman I talked with said, men took the other women's cookies, they ate the meals that were offered, but they dated me. I believe the way to project warmth is to feel it. Learn to be sincerely interested in the individuals you meet at the Y. Some could fake it, but I doubt if you can. I'll consider the last point seriously, she said after some thought. Is there anything else? That's about it. Wait, what about looks, the search for the 10? There's always interest in arm value for prestige dates like missionary reunions, but that's passing. You're far above average, so that's not an issue. You now know the price. Do you want to pay it? I don't think I could pay the full price even if I wanted to. I have too strong a need for individuality. The loving and caring attitude you describe feels right. The rest of the things you describe feel wrong. They undercut my feeling of self, my integrity. I must be myself. Do all Mormons demand that price for their favor? I don't think so. I surely hope not, I answered. But I am not sure. I thought of H, a friend of one of my daughters, after several bad experiences, gave up dating Mormons. She is a convert with a strong testimony, but she decided she had to go to non-Mormons to find a man she could live with. She was bright, competent, filled with ability and energy, and had an excellent job. Mormon men seemed intimidated. She wanted partnership, something they could not offer. It was easy to find non-Mormons to date, so she finally married a non-Mormon who loved her for what she was and wanted a partner. I wonder if my daughters will be forced into taking such a road. My daughters will decide what to do for themselves. They are capable. I am pleased and proud of their stand for individuality and independence in the face of such enormous pressure to conform. I cry for the women at the Y, trying to hide their talent, ability, and individuality and show awe to their equals. And I cry for the men at the Y missing golden opportunity to know the intelligent and exciting women there. I cry most for the men there, perhaps without knowing, are using the women at the Y to get cookies and self-aggrandizement. My understanding of the gospel tells me that they, not the women that they use, will reap the most unhappiness. Men think they are They've got a good deal now, and they seem intent on preserving it. They're wrong, but I can understand why they're deceived. I'm embarrassed to say that I too might have been deceived in similar circumstances. I worry about the long-term impact of such dating system. It encourages women to believe that men are the source of their happiness. Men cannot be such a source. Happiness comes partly from within. Men also are encouraged to accept this myth and then spend years struggling to provide women's happiness before they discover they can't. Finally, women are discouraged from discovering themselves and finding personal goals and criteria for happiness aside from their marriage and family. If women don't have a personal life, vague discontent grows and surfaces years later in a crisis that may destroy the marriage. I've thought a lot about the conversations I had with my daughters and friends these last few months. I am becoming more and more convinced of four things. One, casual dating is dying at the Y, and its demise should be mourned because of the loss of self-esteem, social opportunities, and misunderstandings it leaves with our sons and daughters. Many, perhaps most, of our daughters are being required to give up individuality, self-esteem, and belief in goals beyond marriage to receive the approval of Mormon men. Three, many, perhaps most, of our daughters are not even aware that a primary ingredient of popularity with men, warmth and unselfish personal interest in people, is not degrading and is in fact a fundamental tenet of the gospel. And four, very few of our sons are participating actively in the dating process. Most of those that do don't give warmth and personal interest. They only receive it and thus lose the blessing of that gift. I asked myself, how could this happen at the Y? Could it be because the church auxiliaries separate the sexes too young and teach men things like sports and mission and career to men, and women's things like marriage and homemaking skills, how to be attractive to women, but few common things to both? Or could it be the ideals we teach our children? I have noticed that women are taught in church to be attractive to men. Women view their worth in terms of success in attracting men. I've also noticed that within my acquaintance, few women prepare for life after children leave home, and few have strong goals and personal opinions. They may even begin to believe the worth of their ideas is less, and that they need not have goals other than marriage. Since Mormon women view their life goals as marriage and motherhood, they see dating as the initial measure of success, their grade. They may even become so interested in dating, in serious dating, and where the relationship is going, that they cling too much and scare off some men that might be interested in casual dating and becoming acquainted. Men, on the other hand, are taught to compete in the world of work, not social skills. So, although they worry about being attractive to women, they have an alternative and so form varied goals and opinions and learn to act as individuals. Men who are serious about their careers may be tempted to do a little casual dating in early college years. Such men would then go on missions, come home, and immediately move toward marriage, thus missing the casual dating step entirely. Maybe the basing of our group activities at the Y within ward units at the Y gives the dating system too much church bias. The church setting and general feeling of the Y encourages the search for perfection, which is interpreted as having the accepted views of man, women, positions in life, wearing accepted clothing and hairstyles, dating women with certain accepted characteristics in a certain accepted way. Individualism and uniqueness might become unacceptable with men seeking the model woman and women seeking to become the model. The result may be to become the ill-defined person referred to by the other, sometimes jealous women of the Y as airheads or clones. The first term appears to be erroneous. Such women aren't empty-headed. They have just learned the lesson the Y men have taught them. Hide your opinions and individuality and do what is required to date. The second term seems apt. They are trying to clone perfection, not realizing that the most admirable character traits are not goals of to achieve, but methods of living. I'm most puzzled by how the dating system turned out at the Y when I compare it to the model given in the scriptures. Non-Mormon universities can be excused and even praised for diversity, although diversity sometimes includes evil practices. But how can I excuse a university that claims to be based on gospel principles when I hear women struggling to find a husband and purpose for their lives described as losers, twos on a scale of 10, airheads, mollies, clones, when popularity demands the sacrifice and individuality of spirit? If the Apostle Paul came for a visit, I suspect he would cry out in rage at the injustice of men using women callously to get free meals and a boost for their egos when the greatest tenet of the gospel is charity. The charity that suffers long and is kind, that envieth not, vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth in the truth, endureth all things. It's clear to me that something is wrong, so let me show unto you a more excellent way. If I could build a dating system from scratch, I would offer the students a casual daters club. In these, for at least one semester, they would be required to date every week, but not the same person. This system would ensure the students become acquainted with many others before they look for a marriage partner. But most of the people I talk with argue that such clubs cannot be formed at the Y. The reason is that those who would gain most in joining such a club, i.e. the ones most affected by the problem, are the ones least able to join. They haven't the self-esteem and courage to break with tradition. After all, a friend said, "Would you join a club of no-daters and proclaim to the world that you're a lonely person that doesn't date? Besides, most women at the Y don't see the value of casual dates. They constantly talk about whether a relationship is going somewhere. Furthermore, the relationship between men and women at the Y is too lopsided to allow such clubs to work. The club is based on a concept of equality that is not accepted even in theory. Women have no power in the system. Men are late for a date. They don't call for weeks and are carefully aloof. Women still try to think of ways to please them. Thus, the casual daters club, which is based on equal partnership in dating, has no chance, and men are not about to give up their perks." There is truth in this argument. I think the casual daters club could not start immediately on campus, but maintaining the status quo is wrong when something can be done, and I believe something can be done. I see basic goodness and justice in humankind, and I believe in ingenuity and the courage of people once their sense of fair play has been violated. If I were a woman at the Y, I'd rebel. 80% of the women there are being dumped on. They should write a new set of dating rules and ratify them. The existing rules are evil. Let me suggest the following as a dater's pledge for the rebellious. First, I refuse to buy affection or curry favor to get dates. Specifically, I refuse to give special favors, cookies and clothes and whatever, unless I receive similar kinds of favors. Two, I will never refuse a weekend date with a new acquaintance unless I have a prior engagement or have some reason to doubt good intentions. In addition, I refuse to date others or let others date me solely for prestige. Three, I will pay my own way. If my escort pays for one activity, I'll pay for the next. If I allow a man to always pay my way, I give up some of my independence. Four, it's okay for women to ask men for dates. Five, I refuse to treat other women primarily as competitors in a dating game. It's okay to go out with women friends. 6, I demand the right to express my own ideas and opinions and support all others in the same right. No subject is off limits, and no opinion is wrong. 7, I believe in the concept of the worth of every human being and in the importance of Christian love in relationships. I will give each man I date my individual attention and interest. I will indicate honestly if there is no romantic interest. 8, I demand the right to be myself at all times and refuse to mold myself to suit anyone. To get the ball rolling, a few women might anonymously post this pledge on some of the Y bulletin boards and solicit a response by asking those interested to mark the poster with a check. In addition, a description of the pledge might be run in one of the campus newspapers. Encourage suggestions to until a set of pledge rules are found that are practical, well-founded in Christian love, and support the individuality and self-esteem of women as well as men. If interest is shown, post a notice asking those interested to wear an I've taken the pledge button on Fridays. I wonder how that would work. I suspect many women would wear the button. I also think many men would wear it. I'm an incurable optimist, however. I'm convinced that there are many intelligent and decent men at the Y who would jump at the chance to change the current dating practices. The others are not worth dating anyway. The buttons will probably generate questions which can be used to spread the new dating gospel, a new set of golden questions. The button wearers could be the nucleus of a casual daters club, but the actual formation of the club may never be necessary because those who want people to date on weekends could choose those with choose from those with badges. If the pledge badge idea doesn't pay off, each woman and man can still make a private pledge. Those principles may not always produce frequent dates at the Y, but they can be a basis for self-esteem and long-term social success, and so are worth striving for. Although I have written this essay from the women's viewpoint, most of the men I have talked with agree that changes are needed. Thus, there may be support for change, and the implementation of these principles may bring about the resurrection of casual dating at the Y. The rest of you, I hope, will respond in such a way as to find out at least two things. One is there any chance for such a casual daters club? And the second one is, have I interpreted my data correctly or incorrectly?
I think that the problem is not necessarily a problem of dating at the Y. I think that it's a much larger problem in Mormonism itself, that sexism is just inherent in Mormonism. And it seems that with those bases, it would be hard to step away from that. Whereas the women don't hold the priesthood and basic things like that, you're going to deal with a sexist culture from the nature of the religion.
In terms of the first question, I agree with Kristen that there are some basic things in Mormon culture that tend to establish vertical relationships between men and women. And that, in a way, just from a doctrinal basis and an intellectual basis, it becomes very difficult to establish equal relationships. But there's also another thing that's not mentioned in the paper, and that there's a lot of pressure for men and women, I think, at BYU to strive to go toward marriage. And in fact, you hear rumors, I don't know if they're true or not, I've never heard the talks, but when general authorities come down and speak at firesides, I've heard casual dating is kind of something that's counseled against, and you're to be dating to find your mate for life. And a lot of people, of course, because they have a very strong testimony in the prophets and our general authorities take that advice very seriously. And so that's another reason, I think. I think if we could somehow figure out maybe some different ways to interpret our doctrine and some different ways to interpret the advice that come from our leaders, then maybe there'd be a real strong possibility for more casual dating. But I disagree with the idea of a club, because it seems to me we focus a lot of attention on men and women's relationships in the church and BYU as young people, and that's part of the problem. I think a lot of us start feeling self-conscious and like, I'm dating because it's a commandment, not because I'm interested in finding some friends. And so it just seems to me that people that are between the ages of 19 and 23 years old in life, they're at a time where biology is going to take care of the dating process, and we don't need to draw any extra attention to it. Maybe the kind of things that we do need to draw attention to are basic principles that when you're out trying to find a mate for life, or you know, it seems that's the strange way to approach that. You don't go out with the idea of finding a wife. You go out with the idea of, or a husband. You go out with the idea of finding a friend. And if that develops further, then that's fine. On the second question, whether the data in the paper is interpreted or correct, it's mentioned in the paper that it's hard to quantify these kind of things, and who knows the extent, but I think there is a general atmosphere at BYU that there's this idea of casual dating is there's just a lot of pressures against that, and a lot of pressures for kind of, you know, the whole idea of the council too. The responsibility is put on men to go out and find a wife, and it's sort of, the implication is like the woman really has no choice in the matter. She just waits for some handsome Prince Charming to come along and sweep her off her feet, and that's, you know, That's just the kind of thinking and the kind of implications of the council, and even if the council isn't given that way or in that vein, that's certainly the way it's taken among the student body at BYU, and it's, you know, I guess it's unfortunate. I agree with the analysis of the paper, but there's also a group of students, I think, at BYU, kind of I like to refer to it as a university within the university, that follow these kinds of principles and, you know, have a good time, and they don't get too stressed out about that kind of thing. So that's my answer.
I agree that the basic premise of making a club for casual dating is the why as an institution is already institutionalized dating. It's so to re-institutionalize it is going to take the casualness right out of it, even more than the BYU has itself. The problem also with making a club is that clubs are formed all the time down there, and they turn into elitist-type groups that function outside the official university. And I think the point here is the question of sex. It's not only a Mormon problem, it's a national problem, it's a health problem, it's a problem. And it's changing, and the roles between a man and a woman in America are changing, and it's not only a Mormon problem, it's just that they aren't defined, and there isn't a traditional role anymore for a man or a woman. It has to be decided between the two individuals on a larger extent than it used to be.
As far as the club is concerned, I don't believe that it's a possible solution either. The students at BYU are much too cynical for something like that. However, I do have to disagree with a lot of my fellow. I think casual dating exists excessively at BYU. If I didn't casual date, I'd never go out. I mean, I do it constantly. And my friends do it. And I don't see as that it doesn't exist. I go out with friends of mine all the time. And most of my friends happen to be male. And we just go out, we'll go shopping, they'll call me out, you want to go to the store, you want to go do this or that or the other thing. I think it exists a lot, and I think it's there, and I think that that the conclusions of this paper are a little off in the fact that they think that it doesn't exist. As far as women at BYU not dating and things, I don't think that... I think a lot of women, and this is my own personal opinion, bring a lot of their problems upon themselves as far as that is concerned. And a lot of people don't understand that, and I can see this in my own life, that you have to grow and learn to understand what's going on. You know, dating isn't an easy thing. And you have to grow and you have to understand. And that doesn't mean that you sacrifice what you are. But you do have to understand what's going on. And as far as the counsel from the church and things are concerned, I've never felt that much pressure. I do believe that it is my calling, you know, in life, and as far as the church is concerned, to have a family, and I'm not ashamed of that at all. And if I don't happen to have that in the next several years, that's fine too. I have plans for a career. Either way, I'll be fine, and I think, you know, a woman needs to do that for herself, but I don't believe that a lot of these problems can be set upon the men. I think a lot of them come from the women themselves and just the fact that people expect too much too soon.
I've kind of inherited the chair de facto. I would like, if the audience has some questions and wants to raise some issues... Yeah, go ahead.
You made an interesting statement. The girls have to know what's going on. I want to know what's going on.
Well, I'm just trying to say that for most of my life, I did not date, period. Period. I have not dated at all. And a lot of it is just, it's not. I'm not trying, and my dad says, well, Heidi, it's because you don't know how to play the game, or you don't know how to do this, or you don't know how to do that. And I said, well, Dad, I refuse. I will not play this game. To me, that's dishonest. You break 3 or 4 commandments playing that game. You know, I won't do it. But as was stated in the paper, it just takes time to learn and to understand relationships with people and how to go about it. The part he said about clinging on to people because you don't date very much, that's just a stage of dating that you learn and you go through.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I had a little bit of a problem in the with that part of the paper, just particularly that sentence bothered me, because that kind of assumes that a woman is sitting around waiting for some man to come along, and when he does, be he ugly or different from her in a number of ways, she's going to cling on to him anyway. And that is really sexist in its basis. Assuming that a woman at the Y feels like she has to have a man or she has to have some sort of male relationship in her life. And maybe that's true. Maybe the majority of women at the Y do feel that way. But certainly all of them don't. Certainly there are those who feel perfectly complete in their life without a man.
I think the one major difference between Mormon and BYU dating is the church's strict stand on premarital sex, and we're all at least, you know, that's one of the standards. That's part of the BYU standards, that you're going to abide by those standards. But the culture, the American culture at large, his observations at other universities, those standards are, you question assumptions about your dates. When I was raised in Ohio, my bishop played a tape of David O. McKay, and he said, you can hold a girl's hand after you get to know her, you know, after half a year or something. So I dated non-Mormon girls in high school, and I came to the Y, and I had this fear that all their fathers would be like David O. McKay, and and you have a healthy respect for the... But that's the difference between the BYU and other universities, I think, is that you have some standards there that everybody's aware of.
Let me raise one issue. Let's go back to the fundamental issue. What about Phil Koontz's data? Is it true, to your understanding, that 20% of the women do most of the dating at the Y? 80% are getting dumped on. Is that really true, or are you saying that's not true? That's, by the way, it isn't just Phil Koontz. I have a fairly extensive bit of data that would back that. And another data point is from a psychologist who is aiding some of this 80% of the women who are coming to them and saying, "What's wrong with me?"
Again, I think that's a problem that's fundamental in the church. Women are taught from the time they're very small to take the submissive role. And I don't know very many women at the Y who are willing to call a man on the phone and ask him out for a date. And it's a problem that is inherent in the culture.
The 20% number and the quantification, I don't know. Was a survey taken or exactly what happened?
Well, my information is, no, I stated I did not have a broadly based survey. This was Phil Koontz who took several local surveys in his classes. His classes are quite large. Apparently he does get some degree of understanding of what it is. And Phil's not a Koontz, or not a fool, not a Koontz. He's not a fool. This is his field. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
The psychologist that I talked with also had similar information, and he said it has tracked well in his experience. It's real. 80% of the women are getting dumped on. The question is it really their own fault? Is it because they? Somebody implied you learn a better way. I mean, you just have to do different techniques. You've learned, somebody's father suggested you've got to learn to play the game. Is that what we really should be doing? Should we be teaching our daughters how to play a game? Yes.
My comment or question is, assuming that the 80-20% is accurate, could anyone substantiate what outside of BYU the percent would be? Is it more or less? And I would suppose that that is typical of American society, and BYU is not unique, if that is true. And in fact, outside of BYU, it may be 90% and 10%.
Now, my information says no, it's not true. Outside the university, the BYU, it is not that bad. It's broader based. However, I'm willing to accept the fact that I don't have the data from those other universities to back that. It is an observation by people who were there. They said that is not true. That there was a broader based dating system. It was more loose, easy. Yes.
Do you have any information on what percentage of the males are dating?
It seems to be very similar.
It's about 20% of the males also doing most of the dating?
Yes. The rest of them apparently go through this flash courtship. You get married.
I don't know if it's so... I liked what you said here in the paper. I think it is toward the end. And you talked about the quantification. I don't know if it's so important to quantify it, because what you said is if the numbers are reversed, where there's 20% of the people left out of the social scene, it's still a problem. And it still seems, I think, to be traceable to elements of our culture and elements of American culture, if you will. And so it's, you know, I don't know if quantification is a real issue.
I think it goes back to this idea that a guy can dump, or it's the guys that are dumping. President Holland got up last year and said this concept that a woman's responsible for keeping the date from getting out of hand sexually is totally false. Yeah, and he blamed it all on the man, that a man with a priesthood ought to control the situation. So
to me, that's an over, you know, you're, the man and the woman are equally responsible for what goes on. And the idea of dumping on is a mutual thing.
Right. I'm not dumped on unless I accept being dumped on in a way.
Sometimes I agree.
If my information is correct, it has not changed.
I worked in the MIA for quite a few years, and over a period of time in planning with some of the youth committees in our state, a subject came up, and I had a number of different girls comment that they liked dating non-Mormons better than dating Mormons because the Mormon guys tended not to treat them as well as did the non-Mormons. Do any of you have any comments on that sort of thing or any experience?
I have at least one vote from a woman named H who said yes.
I think it's generally true. It's this thing that's sort of pervasive throughout our mind. It's so subtle. It's things that you wouldn't even notice unless you take a step back and you say, oh, well, hey, wait a minute. You know, I mean, just the whole idea that it's the man's responsibility to... The whole speech last year during General Priesthood meeting, rise up from the dust and become men, and in the context that you're not a man if you don't go out and find a wife, that whole thing, that idea is just indicative of a pervasive underlying sort of idea that it's the man's job to go and find a woman, and women wait. And women were given the advice, I think, early last year to make yourselves look pretty so your future husband will come along. And you see, somehow or another, we're given different roles, and the women, at least from my interpretation of it, seem to have the submissive role, and the men have the dominant role. And this is only one example of many. It's pervasive throughout our whole culture. We're taught in primary, you know, the whole thing.
We're missing something here. I got to put something in here. women are not in a zero position. They aren't just passively waiting. The smart ones are getting out there and learning the techniques that are required to win. Now, I believe that those techniques that are required to win are wrong. They're evil. I don't know that I want my daughters to learn those techniques. Do I want them to learn how to, I cited in the paper, do I want them to exercise those techniques? They are techniques that are degrading. They are not right for a human being. They should have the option to stand up and be what they are.
A lot of times, I think, in general, the men seem to be very threatened by intelligent, bright women who know where they're going and have an idea of who they are. For some reason, the men, and I don't know if this is true of men in general, or it's my personal opinion that it is more prevalent in Mormon men, particularly at BYU. But in general, it seems that the men there are very threatened by capable, bright women.
Is that what we want to do with our women then?
So yes. You pretend not to be bright, and then you're okay.
I just have something really quick. I think the problem is that we have institutional expectations. Mormon women know what a Mormon man, in parentheses, should be. And when I date non-Mormon girls, they don't have those expectations of what a Mormon man should be, like a Mormon woman does, or a Mormon man does with a Mormon woman. And so it is more casual when you're dating non-members of the church. It makes it easier.
I don't think I have very good news for you, because I moderated 3 panels this year of single adults. That's 31 up to eternity. And they share these same concerns. You don't throw out of them. They're not limited to BYU. And I always get really angry when I in any discussion on male-female relationships that make them the threatening sexual kind of thing, because if we are to follow
the advice we hear are being given, that we don't waste our time, except with women we're going to marry, or men we're going to marry, we have then the situation we're discussing here. Many of my friends are women, but I can only marry one. And if I could only date the one I'm going to marry, my life would be empty.
Good for you.
Yes.
I work with a lot of students in the University of Utah in the institute area, and I think you'll find that this is a common phenomenon there as well. I don't think it's unique at BYU. I think you'll find that in any, if you go to Ritz College, I'll bet you'll find the same thing. In fact, I have a niece that went there and reports the same phenomenon, that the majority of the girls are not dating, and the majority of the guys are not, and there's a few that are. You have these expectations and all these other problems in it, and it isn't just BYU. And I think a lot of it is not even related to the Mormons. It's related to our culture today. It's related to our society, and it's related to a lot of the pressures economically that people are facing in terms of getting married and the divorce rate and what they see, the fear they see of marriage and the fear they see of failing in that. And the disintegration of communications between people, and it's not just a Mormon phenomenon at BYU, and it goes much broader and deeper than setting up a club or something to solve the problem.
Yes.
Someone has to explain to me how, if only 20% of the people are dating, how did 97% get married?
talked about the fact that in the church, I think it was 97% of all males and all females are eventually married.
Those are statistical tricks. It's easy to explain all of them. But let me talk to your first one.
Okay.
What these people said was this. 20% are doing most of the dating. That doesn't mean that there aren't some others who are dating. They are dating, but they date two dates and they're married. I mean, it's a very short, a truncated item. It is not a large group of people getting to know each other. It's not 80% getting to know 80% and then finally marrying one of the 80%. That's the impression I got from what was being stated. In fact, if I gave you the details of the statistics, which I didn't take time for, what it really says is that I think it's something like 20% are doing something like 93% of the dating, of the total amount of dating that's done. That doesn't mean these other women and these other men don't eventually somehow get to know or get to find each other. It's that there is nothing that is casual. Let's see, there's nothing that's acquaintance making. All they do is meet and marry, and that's dangerous.
I have to disagree. Can I disagree?
Yeah, disagree.
I have to disagree. Number one, I have heard countless leaders of the church tell you to enjoy your dating years. That will be the time when you get acquainted with the best members of the church, when you will learn to know people. I have heard that time and time again. Number two, I believe, honestly, I believe this, and my 3 years at the Y, I have probably lived with some 30 different girls. And I honestly believe that those girls that don't date, they bring it upon themselves an awful lot of the time. And you know, you may disagree with that, but I look at them, and I had this one apartment especially I'm going to share with you. There were six of us in the apartment, and I seemed to go out with, dating is probably a bad word, but I seem to go out a lot with different boys, do different things, this casual dating. And they're all like, well, how come you do this, or how come you do that? And they were really negative about the ward they were in and different things. And they said, well, no one in this ward cares about us, or this, that, and the other thing. And they felt that's why they never did anything. And I said, don't tell that to me. Don't say to me that no one in this ward cares about you. You won't go to the activities. You won't put yourself out. And if you don't put yourself out, why do you expect someone else to put their self out for you? And I honestly believe that, and it has been the situation in apartment after apartment after apartment that I've lived in, that girls won't go out, and neither do the boys. They don't put themselves out, and then they sit around and complain, well, I don't get to go out, or I don't get to do this, or that, or the other thing.
About the church council you talked about, I think it's pretty clear from the record that the church council that at least has been offered at BYU has been largely centered around marriage and the dating process as an ends, as a means to the end of marriage and not as a means to the end of friendship. And I think that's pretty clear from the record about the church council that at least has been given at BYU. And, you know, about the people who don't want to go to ward activities and stuff and put that out, I think that could be explained a lot is because they're dissatisfied with what they're told about dating, and they kind of get the impression that when they go to the ward activities, they're kind of on the market. And well, right, the meat market. And you know, it's a real difficult thing. I mean, I can see that maybe certainly there's responsibility from everyone, and no one's entirely the victim. But I think there's some fundamental problems with the way we're being taught how to find mates in this life.
We've had a request. We really should have each of the panelists introduce themselves and define their prejudice. What is your where are you? I mean, what is your background? Where are you from? You're all students of the Y, or were?
I am.
You are. Okay. Why don't you just introduce yourself, give your name, and where you're from, and all that sort of stuff.
I'm Kristen Rushforth. I was raised in Orem, Utah. And I still live there.
Where's your prejudice coming from?
Prejudice? What's, you tell me what my prejudice is, and then I'll explain it. I've been there for too long.
I'm Mark Freeman. I'm from Colorado, and I've been a student at BYU for about 3.5 years, or 3 years? 3 years, 3.5 years. And, yeah.
Jim Jeffries, Alpine, Utah, graduate in history, BA, master's in health administration. I've dated thousands of women and spent thousands of dollars. And I'm one of the people President Benson was talking to.
My name is Heidi Steele. I'm a political science major. I'll graduate this December. I am from a very, very small town in Washington. There is one stop sign there. I have not dated much my life except for maybe the past year. My prejudice is, and I'll freely state this, that I think when people find themselves in a situation, they ought not to look to what everybody else is doing for the solution, but to look within themselves. And oftentimes they'll find that solution there.
Now, there's more questions.
I didn't
let's
have
see.
A question. I wanted to answer her question.
Oh, okay.
I think, and she's right about some of our Mormon boys, I think they're somewhat lacking in social graces. And perhaps that's why she mentioned going with outsiders.
In all fairness, that role right there is a prejudice role. there was one other. There was a woman just behind you. Yes. Yes, you.
I think Utah's BYU Mormons are just entirely too self-conscious. I came from Arizona. I heard all the rumors about BYU, the jokes about going there to get married, about the meat market. I went there expecting to laugh, expecting to see it. I went there to meet the guys from California who were going there. All I did was casual dating. I never did anything else. And I still to this day, I can't see why. It just seems like people are so self-conscious. I don't see this. Everybody I know was a big casual dater, and I'm thinking maybe that 20% figure you give. I'm wondering when they took that survey, what is going on in people's minds as far as their definition of what a date is.
I think it was defined on the sheet, and the definition is very easy. It's a man and a woman. No, the casual date was defined as what I've indicated in the beginning of the paper. Something very easy, certain very simple kinds of things, very inexpensive, all that sort of stuff. That's truly a casual date. The other things that I defined, that was the date that was serious date.
That's all I saw when I was there with casual dating. And I'll tell you, within the war unit, yes, I saw what you're talking about.
Yeah. No, let me finish.
I saw what you're talking about it, and me and my friends laughed at it. But we just gave it to them. You guys, if you want to do that, say those things, you can do it. And I saw it within the war, but I didn't see it anywhere else.
We have established that we have at least two here that are part of the 20%. Because you did casual date. You are casual dating. So you're part of the 20%.
Well, I'm not sure that 20% are people who are casual daters. I think it's people. I think it's the people you're talking about. That stereotype of the woman who says what she's supposed to say. I didn't think that I was supposed to live when I went up to BYU, and I didn't say the things I was supposed to say. And I
agree. You're pretty.
Well, sure. I didn't look the way I was supposed to look. Did you marry a woman after you left Hawaii? Where did you meet him? I met him. He lived in an apartment that was up at the Y, and I left and went back to ISU and then came back and married him.
Let me make sure you understand one thing. These are statistical results. I would be flabbergasted. Absolutely, totally surprised, freaked out, if I didn't find somebody in this room who would say, your statistics are all wrong, that isn't what happened to me. I myself found women who said, your statistics are all wrong, that isn't what happened to me. Nonetheless, the statistics that I found were right. There's 80% that are getting dumped on. Now, maybe it's because they don't understand the game or understand how to play it or what to do or whatever. I'm not trying to claim that. I'm merely stating a fact. That's real. I've had it confirmed from two different sources. These guys who live there and are adults, who work on the campus and know enough, have heard enough bitter tears to know that it's real. Yes?
Maybe you need to get some more statistics. When I was in the service, I went to BYU, by the way, but when I was in the service, I met several non-Mormon men who couldn't wait to get to BYU on their Christmas vacation or on a furlough or leave. They'd hop a military hop and go in groups to BYU because they said that BYU girls don't smoke and they don't drink, but they sure like to date. maybe some of these statistics you're getting are from girls who don't want to admit that they're dating some of these non-Mormons who are sneaking on campus. maybe you haven't got the statistics from the non-Mormons who found.
Maybe.
I want to change the subject just a smidge because we're running out of time, and there's a question I really would like to know from people who are closer to it by far than I am. I remember in Mutual and Sunday school, et cetera, when I grew up, you didn't talk to girls about anything beyond marriage. And as far as I know now, the end of a man's life is his mission. That's what I get from priesthood manuals, that they lead you to a mission and then there's something beyond, but they don't talk about it. Do you have any suggestions? You're closer to it. What could they teach? What could the church put in manuals that would help us become people instead of men and women?
Don't concentrate at all on the sex roles. Just ditch it all. Just talk about being good human beings.
Yeah, I think that works, but I want it specific. I want to know what kind of a lesson they can write that's going to be acceptable to the leaders of the church. It's going to go through correlation, and that's going to teach us how to relate to each other as people, as individuals,
It might be difficult to get something that's incredibly workable through the correlation meeting, but I think here's an idea. I had a friend in high school who whose parents both worked. They're psychologists. They work for Larimer County Mental Health, and they decided they wanted to adopt some children because she had a hard time having children. And so the way they worked that out in terms of the roles is, and it's not, this isn't easy, it's easy for everyone else as it was for them, but they job shared, and he spent half the time raising the children, and she and spent half his time working, and so did she. And I'm not saying that's the solution for all things, but we've been counseled in our church clearly against that kind of arrangement. And you see, those are the kinds of things that are the most blatant manifestations of this fundamental idea of establishing vertical relationships between males and females, where the male's in the dominant position and the female. We're trying to perpetuate some traditional sex roles in our society that seem to carry some baggage along with them that demean women, in my mind, and also really limit the potential of men and women.
I think this is one area where the old Mormon motto, mind your own business and let other people mind theirs, still holds for the large portion of Mormon culture, is that it's between you and your bishop and the person you're dating, and you're not going to get quantitative studies of this stuff, and it's a private, personal thing.
I'm sorry to dominate, but how do you quantify something like being dumped on?
I don't need that thing. Okay.
Being dumped on. A woman who is, anyone who is in a position where they do not have control over their lives is being dumped on. Now, it's been stated here by several that indeed they do have control over their lives. They can get around this problem, but my claim is that if they have to do things that are incorrect, in my terms, they would be, in essence, immoral, because they are not being true to themselves. Then they're being dumped on. That's quantified.
How do you get the 80%? Just because 80% are dating, why does that mean you're being dumped on?
Maybe they don't want to date. Maybe they're in perfect control.
That was why there was another question in the questionnaire, and I read the results of that one too. Do you want to date? And the answer was yes. You bet. They wanted to date more. There was no issue on that. And they weren't dating, and therefore and you're right. I used being dumped on, and that's not a fair quantitative statement. That is a correct statement. That was used for shock value. Yes.
A couple things. I think it's easy to go out on a casual date with a friend and hang out as a bud. But if you want to go on a date with someone, they're ready to get married. They're looking at you as an investment. And how much are they going to be out before they find out if you're worth it or not? You know, and it's like, well, I can take you to Dollar Night and find out if you're the one for me, because if you are, I should be hit with revelation.
Are you really serious?
Yeah, I really am. Yeah, I really am.
An investment. Heaven help us.
I think a lot of guys give you that idea. Are you going to keep the conversation going? Are you going to be bright? Are you going to have the long curly hair? You know, I mean, are you going to be everything that I want you to be?
It's not so much that, I think. It's the inner. You can tell the dynamics between the two people, I think, pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It's not so much of an investment, but you can tell whether...
One thing you can do, as you suggested, is pay your own way. That's one suggestion to make it a little bit more casual, or to make it a little bit less.
I do oftentimes. I think they pay guys more than they pay for me. I do. And I probably made guys, you know, dinner 20 to 1. The guys never made me dinner. I never go to a guy's house for dinner, and yet it's my choice to make him dinner, you know, and I guess I get equal payback in some other way, but needless to say, they do expect that of you.
I have a suggestion for making it casual. It wouldn't matter where you're going, but It's, I don't want to marry you, honey, I just want to take you to the movie. Well, I want to take you to the temple. I don't want to marry you.
What?
That's not a little scary.
We have a problem with older singles dances. Women won't dance with men that they're not going to marry.
Oh.
I mean, it's that extreme.
Don't categorize.
You've had to suggest, well, that's the approach you use. I don't want to marry you. I just want to dance with you.
I just want to make a comment about that I've observed. I think it's relevant to this in a way. A few years ago, I went to the BYU to present a paper, and I had been attending a women's university. And I was stunned when I got to the BYU because I saw so many pregnant women and so many little children. And here I've been going to a women's university, and I never saw pregnant women, and I didn't see children except on registration day. Okay, well, I went down and I gave this presentation for this conference. I stayed there a couple days. I came up here. I went to the University of Utah, and I went to the same type of building that I was using. And I didn't see any pregnant women, I see no children. And right now, I'm in the statistics department at SMU, Dallas, Texas. And I don't see pregnant women, I don't see children. Once in a while, the graduate students will bring in their children to show me. I don't see any of this on campus. I don't ever see pregnant women, I don't see children. And if I were a guy, I'd be scared to death. Because at the BYU, it looks like, if you date, then you're going to get married, you're going to have children, and that's a lot of responsibility. For college years, I think that's taking on a lot.
Yes.
Just one comment, I think that maybe has been reflected by a lot of people, but the suggestions you made about a dating club and about 80% of people really being out of it and not having what they want going on and so on, it really seems to me that the solutions are not in group kinds of things. They're not in institutional responses. They are individual. You talked about girls having to meet certain boys' expectations. What I tell my daughters is if that's the kind of expectation you're getting, that's a good sign as to move on to the next guy. And I think I have a daughter who's not been interested in dating right now. She's interested in some other things. And I think everybody has ways to deal with their situation. If they don't, they find their counselors, they find their friends, they come to their bishops. But it does seem to me that we have to look for individual solutions and unique personalities and unique differences, not look to institutional solutions for the answer.
I think that's pretty true. Ultimately, the solutions to the problems in our lives are at the individual level. But I think there's some real useful institutional things that could be changed that would help us and make it easier for us to be individuals. But anyway, I think one thing is we need to start recognizing that our value as human beings doesn't have to be when we're in a marriage relationship. There's a lot of single people in our church who aren't married, who've chosen to live life without a spouse, and I think in real pervasive ways, in fundamental ways, they're not valued in our organization. They're just not allowed to be in the mainstream of everything, and it's really sad. I think we lose a lot of really bright people that way. And if there wasn't all this pressure to bring spirits out of the pre-existence down to earth in the context of a marriage relationship, then I think it'd be a little easier for us to be individuals. And the institutional change, obviously, is some rethinking at the top.
Any more? It's about time to quit. Thank you for... Oh, yes?
One more point. First of all, I think that, in the sense of dating, if a man likes to cook or something like that, and women just don't expect those types of things of men. And secondly, I think that they should encourage and not use the priesthood as a some overbearing or power of some sort that subjugates women. Because, first of all, to me, and maybe my understanding of the doctrine of the priesthood is wrong, but women, once they are married, receive the same blessings of the priesthood.
What if I don't get married?
In that marriage experience, okay? But secondly, what about the man who doesn't get married? You know, I mean, he's told he's going to be condemned, he's going to be damned, and the woman's going to be able to date among the gods. What kind of attitude is this that the man that doesn't get married will be, you know, cast into outer darkness, and then the woman, you know, have the utmost, the greatest thing in the world, you know, she'll have all the blessings and everything. I mean, that to me, I don't know if it's doctrinally founded, and I don't know if it's a faith promoting rumors that have been circulated for years and years. So.
I'll quickly describe where my priesthood prejudice came from. Being raised in the Mormon Church, when I'm 12 years old, I come to this point in my life where all my friends my age, my brother my age, gets this new, incredibly important thing in their life. And some of them who are not, quote, worthy of it, whereas I'm sitting here and I've done all the right things, and why I'm not getting this privilege. And that's, it just kind of sets a sexist base at a very, very early age. That, you know, and people have said before, well, he has the priesthood and you have the power to have separate but equal. And I think that this country has already proved that separate but equal doesn't work.
Okay, it looks like we'd better quit at this point. Thank you very much for your interest and attention.